Hello, child. Hello, teen. Hello, Ollie. Hello. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to our Halloween spooktacular. Hoot.
What?
Hoot. Owls, bats. Hoot.
It's the end of November.
It's the end of November. It's actually the beginning of December by the time this episode drops. Spooky.
No, that's over.
Not all. December is the haunting time.
That's
it's the darkest part of the year. When the ghosts and the ghouls are out to play.
What are you even talking about?
So telling scary stories has been a tradition, like a Christmas tradition that like stopped like not too long ago historically, but up until like the 70s, 60s and 70s. Telling scary stories at Christmas time was what families did. Like, you got together and you told ghost stories and you tried to freak each other out. That was a big part of Christmas. The Christmas ghost story. All of, you have this look on your face.
That makes a lot of sense about Charles Dickens.
Yes. Okay. actually, it does. He has a lot of, he actually, Christmas Carol is his biggest ghost story, but he wrote a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Like, he did. Who's the guy, the famous ghost story guy? The guy who wrote all the famous ghost stories?
Which one?
He's old. He was old. All of his characters were like antiquarians who found ancient scrolls and brought back ghosts and had to dispel them. And the ghosts were all like sheets. They all look like, they all like hid in the curtains and they're all pasty and... Watch out, you accidentally woke up this ghost.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
What is his name? M.R. James. M.R. James. Almost all of his ghost stories, he wrote a ton, were written, he wrote one a year at Christmas time. Published it. He would present them out loud, and then he would publish them. And so they were kind of made to be read out loud. Mm-hmm. But the spookiness is of the season. Don't you believe me?
No.
Also, trick-or-treating and caroling came from the same exact tradition. Just in some cultures, it branched off into what we call trick-or-treating, and in some cultures, it branched off into caroling at Christmas time. But had the same, shared the same
base. We're not here to talk about Christmas.
Jingle bells and Batman smells.
You won't even let Mitzi think about Christmas yet because we haven't celebrated Hanukkah yet.
But then we're not watching any Hanukkah movies. We are watching a Christmas. No, we're not actually watching.
What are you on about?
I guess I was just trying to say that even though it is Christmas time, even though it is holiday season, we are watching once again a spooktacular movie. And we haven't watched a spooky movie in a little while.
I still don't believe this movie's going to be spooky.
Well, I don't know if it's spooky, but it's definitely a horror movie.
I just don't know if I believe that.
1957's The Curse of Frankenstein.
Dun-dun-dun.
By Hammer Films. The first of what we think of, what we all think of, as Hammer Films.
I don't know what that is.
Even though Hammer had existed for a long time. Do you know what Hammer is?
Like, I know what a Hammer is. Like, I have no idea what you're asking me.
I was hoping you'd answer that one. Hammer Studios, we watched Throne of Blood and Godzilla, those were both from Toho Studios in Japan. Mm-hmm. And that Toho is like the most famous like Japanese film studio. Hammer is one of the most famous, or at the time was one of the most famous British film studios.
Okay.
And they'd existed for a long time. They made all kinds of different movies. But in the 1950s, late 50s, with this movie, they were like, let's dive deep into horror. Let's make monster movies. And so it was Frankenstein, Dracula, and the Mummy were the three they wanted to focus on.
Dun, 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 dun.
I don't know how the song goes anymore. Batman. No, wait.
No.
Wolfman, Frankenstein, and Batman. Or something. I don't know. Any case. They basically were trying to become the new Universal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're going to do our own monster movies and create our own monster universe. And they did a lot. But they also did it in color. And with a lot more special effects and blood and guts. And then as the series went on, a lot more nudity and assault.
Great.
But not in this one, as far as I remember. I haven't watched these movies in a long time. They got kind of 70s icky after a while. As they kept trying to top themselves. Like, let's get grosser. And as like American horror was focusing more on like becoming more Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the Hammer was like, we got to keep up with this. To the extent that like a lot of these movies were heavily edited when they came to America. And I think this one was heavily edited when it came to America because it was not your mama's Frankenstein.
It was not James Whale's like arch classic. It was like, we're going to get down to nitty grit. The grit.
Because now we know that Frankenstein is actually the monster. Frankenstein's yes. monster is the monster. Frankenstein is a terrible person, but he's not. He didn't murder an entire family.
He did not murder an entire family. That's the That's where we draw the line.
Yeah.
Personally, I draw the line at murdering an entire family.
Murdering maybe one person from a family, fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. But an entire family, we're done.
Yeah, that's crossing that line.
Yep.
One or two people, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
You're still on solid ground. There's a little bit of gray area at the three or four. This movie was directed by Terence Fisher, based on a novel, actually, by Mary Shelley.
Oh, really?
Oh, Frankenstein. You may have heard of it. And like I said in the last episode, it stars Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee, two actors who you have seen, but you just didn't know their name. So, Ollie, are you ready to dive back into the world of the monster?
What?
The monster world?
I mean, yeah, but good. Never say that ever again.
What? What did I say? The world of the... Fern? The world of Uncle Fern? Hey, look, he's coming back. It's Uncle Fern. He's going to watch... I'm going to watch a movie with you. It's time for the monster movie. I don't know about this, but I get scared by monsters.
You are a monster.
You are a monster, Uncle Fern. Please leave my house. He left. You didn't hear the door because he left it open.
Acting in its prime.
Hey, everybody. I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And
it's Del Toro time.
Right off the bat, what is The Curse of Frankenstein?
A Frankenstein movie.
What is the curse?
There
what's
no
the actual curse?
The curse of self-discovery.
The curse of...
being a psychopath.
The curse of...
creating a monster.
Is that a curse, or is it just something you do?
It's just something you do.
Like, if you were like, I'm going to be a daredevil, and I'm going to jump my motorcycle over a dozen buses that are on fire, covered in spikes...
Mm-hmm.
And then you crash your motorcycle the first time you try it. You can't be say, I'm cursed. It's like, no, you just tried to crash your motorcycle. You just tried to jump. You did something stupid and you got hurt because of it. It has nothing to do with a curse. That just means that you were stupid. So is Frankenstein cursed?
No.
So does he curse people? Like, does he make the world cursed because of his creation?
Not really.
So why is it called The Curse of Frankenstein? I'm honestly asking this question.
I have no idea.
Because it doesn't seem like this movie also comes to like a tidy conclusion. It doesn't give any indication that it doesn't end on a sequel hook. So you're not like, oh, this could carry on further. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that there is a sequel that picks up right where this one leaves off, but we're never like given any like clue of that. So it doesn't seem like this is a curse that's going to be recurring. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree.
Because even in the original novel, Frankenstein seemed like his life was cursed because he had created something that had run off and now was like haunting him from the shadows and like killing his family and friends.
Yes.
But this monster doesn't do that.
No.
Like, it doesn't really go after his family or friends at all.
It doesn't go after anyone.
Right. It tries to kill whatever's in front of it.
Yes.
And without regard for like
anything.
Because it's not really a person in this one.
No.
It's kind of just a monster.
Mm-hmm.
But we came to a conclusion about this movie, which was that in this movie, finally.
Everyone's the monster.
Everyone's the monster in this movie. Except for his buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the guy who plays.
And Elizabeth.
Yeah, she's all right. I mean, she's more than all right, I guess. She's fine.
Yeah, I was like, what did she do?
But as far as our two main leads go, Frankenstein and... Well, I wouldn't even say that the monster is the other male lead because...
He's in it for like a total of 5 minutes.
Yeah, he's in it a little more than 5 minutes, but he's not in it very much. And he doesn't show up for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
So... this movie was the first real Hammer horror film, done in color for less than $1 million. It made for a long time though. It was the record holder for like the biggest box office increase compared to budget. Like it was just the most successful British movie ever made for a while, like as far as like ratio
dang
went, because they didn't spend anything on it and everyone went to go see it. Everyone was mad about it, but everyone loved it because it was so violent and gory for the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, everyone loved that. No one wanted it to get made because of it was, the screenplay was like, and then he shoots the guy in the face. But they were like, the British censors were like, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. And the director, Terrence Fisher, was like, all right, all right, all right, go ahead and film everything anyway. All right, good, good, good. And then they filmed it all and it was a success. So Frankenstein, Curse Thereof. Is this... you were opening your mouth at me. I thought you were going to like yell. is this movie more or less faithful to the novel than, say, James Whale's Frankenstein?
I mean, it has more of the same characters.
Yeah.
But, like, no.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, it seems kind of based on James Whale's Frankenstein.
That's the one that we watched before, right?
Yes.
I don't feel that way about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, like, clearly there's some inspiration there, but they're based on the same exact thing.
They are. And what's funny is, like, they had to legally make this movie as different from James Whale's Frankenstein as they absolutely could. Like, mm-hmm. they rewrote the screenplay several times just because they're like, no, it's still too much like the Universal. Still too much like the Universal. They cast Peter Cushing as Dr. Frankenstein, who is, or I guess, is he a doctor? He's not a doctor in this. He's just Baron Frankenstein.
Yeah, because his friend was his teacher.
Right, he doesn't go to medical school in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Also, his friend is much older than he is, but also the same age. Eventually mm-hmm. the same age.
Mm-hmm.
There's a time. You meet Paul Kremp when Victor Frankenstein is a young man, and then it's like...
Victor Frankenstein's like my age.
Right, right. He's a teen. And then all of a sudden there's a time jump, and Victor Frankenstein is Peter Cushing's age, who's a man of... If he's not approaching middle age, he looks like he's approaching middle age.
Mm-hmm.
And his teacher, Paul, is...
The same.
The same, except with, like, fake gray hair.
Except for you can't really tell it's gray hair throughout the entire movie.
Right. Well, I mean, it is... This movie's in full color, by the way. Beautiful, beautiful full color with a lot of reds and blues.
Mm-hmm. First one we've seen in a while.
Yeah, it's a nice relief. We're like, mm-hmm. Ooh. Easy on the eyes.
I can tell what's going on.
So it starts off with, well, it doesn't start off in the past. Like, well, obviously it starts off in the past. The whole movie takes place in the past. But it starts off in jail.
Yep.
In Switzerland. 19th century Switzerland. Victor Frankenstein is pleading with the jailers to like, wait till my friend Paul gets here. He'll explain everything. Does that pay off for him?
No.
So then we get a flashback. And we find, I guess the novel Frankenstein is Frankenstein telling the story, his story to the sailors.
Yes.
This is him telling the story to his jailers.
So no, to a priest.
That's right. He's trying to get the priest to like put in a good word for him. But we get a flashback to when he was a young man. His father is dead. He's in charge of his estate.
His mother is dead.
Well, and his father.
Well, yes.
Yeah, they're all dead. Everyone's dead.
Yes, but it starts out as after his mother's funeral.
Right, and...
He has no siblings in this one.
He has nobody in this one. Mm-hmm. He's all alone. He's even and so we meet Elizabeth, mm-hmm. who in the novel, of course, was his best friend growing up.
Mm-hmm.
In this movie, he's all, get out of my house, and that's it. And
they're cousins, though.
Right.
And also in the novel, they are also cousins, but also they are also only best friends. Depends on which version you read.
He kicks Elizabeth out of the house because he's
He kicks her mother out of the house.
Right off the bat, you're like, oh, Victor Frankenstein is a jerk in this mm-hmm. version. Like, he is just an unlikable cad in this version.
He's a bratty kid.
Fun fact, the actress who played young Elizabeth is the daughter of the actress who played regular Elizabeth. She was like, why don't you just cast my daughter in this role? She looks just like me. And the director was like, she does look just like you. Sure, we'll cast her in this role. And so they did, and she was miserable. Because she hated it. She didn't want to be an actor. So she wouldn't say any lines or anything. And they were like, just get her in and get her out. Just get her in. Just get her out of here. That's why Elizabeth doesn't say any lines in the opening scene.
I feel like that's fine because Victor and her mother just talked so much.
You think that he would be like, I'll never marry you or something, or say something snooty at her, but he doesn't.
Well, because it was already decided. It wasn't decided between Victor's like mother and her mother, or Victor's father and her mother. It was decided between Victor and her right. mother.
They are betrothed. And then Paul Kremp shows up, and it's like, there's like a wacky scene where he's like, I'm here because Baron Frankenstein wrote to me.
To teach his son.
And then he's like,
my father's dead.
I'm Baron Frankenstein. And he's all, do you have a son? We laugh because it's a funny joke. And then cut to 50 years later when boy Victor is now older Victor. They try to make him look younger, but it doesn't work. But it's still Peter Cushing, and he's amazing, but he's still a jerk. So what's the first thing that we see Victor and Paul do? Their big first experiment.
I can't remember. Oh, they bring a dog back to life.
A sweet doggo. It looks like a dog in Jell-O, originally.
Mm-hmm.
It's just suspended on its side, like hanging sideways.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pull some tricks, and they spin a
wheel.
Like a wheel? Yeah. And the dog comes back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, ooh, and it's like being like a dog. And so we know right off the bat, they have the ability to bring things back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about that right off the bat, because in the novel and in the original movie, Victor Frankenstein, his obsession is creating life the whole time.
Yes.
This movie starts off with him actually creating a formula, a system that'll bring the dead back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of cool. Like, even though, okay, I was having this conversation with myself in the car because it bothers me so much. Because in the novel of Frankenstein, how Frankenstein creates the monster is very vague.
Mm-hmm.
We remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just sort of talks. We know it has something to do with him getting flesh from somewhere.
That's because he doesn't want to tell the sailor how to do it.
Right. And plus, like, Mary Shelley didn't want to get into, like, the details, because who cares? That's not what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
Just we know that he's working on it, and then he does it. And somehow electricity is involved.
No, we don't know that electricity is involved.
Well, he gets the inspiration for it from seeing a lightning bolt. So, like, that's pretty much
no.
it.
He just said a light.
Thinning bolt.
No. There's nothing to do with lightning in the book.
He sees lightning hit a tree when he's a young kid, and that gives him, like, inspiration.
For science.
Okay, fine. In any case.
I was going to say something, but I can't remember what it was now, so.
Oh,
he does bring another creature back to life before he creates the monster.
What does he bring
monster.
Back to life?
I can't remember. I think it's a dog or a cat.
Meow.
In the novel.
I did not remember that.
It might be in the other version of the thing. I just remember that he talks about how he brought like a smaller animal back to life.
Well, if that's the case, then that even supports this even more. Because in this movie, he's like, I don't want to just revive the dead. That's simple, I guess. Like, to me, like, that, there's your fame right there. Like, you just did it. I want to create life is his whole thing. I want to create life. And that's what he does in the book. He somehow makes a creature from the ground up. He doesn't go and steal a brain and turn the they spend all the time with like the brain of the criminal, the brain of the good guy. Like in the novel, he doesn't do that. He just creates life, and that's what he does. Like the monster is not a revived human. It's not a reanimated corpse. It is a completely different creature.
He's just taken pieces, because in the novel he talks about the muscles and the bones.
Yeah, but he kind of like stitches them together.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
He builds new bones and stuff, because the monster is tall and like bigger than a regular person, because he's like, I've got to like process, like he had to make the nerves himself and stuff. Like, it's crazy. And he's created a creature from scratch. That makes him the creator.
Mm-hmm.
But in all the movie versions, even no matter how many pieces you put together, you stick that brain in there, you're still just reviving a corpse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's in a new vessel, but you're still just bringing it back. So he says in this movie, I don't want to just bring things back to life. I want to create life. But then he just does that because he keeps just reviving dead brains.
Mm-hmm.
Am I crazy? Like,
No, you're not crazy.
Like, it bothers me so much. I want to see a Frankenstein where he just grows a Frankenstein monster.
It's called having a child.
Well, there it is. But I guess, like, yeah. I mean, Dr. Pretorius in The Bride of Frankenstein actually does it.
Mm-hmm.
He creates those little homunculi.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how.
But that's not important.
But that's what he does. Like those, he did not dig up little tiny people and bring them back to life.
And then they work together to literally create the bride.
Right. But he still has to get the pieces for the bride.
Does he?
Yeah. Remember they're robbing graves in the...
I don't remember.
Yeah, they're robbing graves and they put her together just like the original monster. He builds a woman. I don't know. It just bothers me because I would love to see a Frankenstein where he's like, I'm just growing this thing from a vat. Like I created a system where I could actually grow a brain from scratch, like from nothing, like from just dead cells.
The funny thing is, though, is that that's literally impossible.
Well, it's not. I mean, scientists now are working on ways of creating organs.
But it was considered impossible in the time periods that these movies were
made.
Right,
but reviving a dead body is still impossible. I don't know. I think I would love to see a Frankenstein adaptation of the novel where
people come back from the dead all the time.
Where that's what he does. Where he's just like, for some alchemical process, he's like, I'm growing bone. And you see him like shaping the bone. And you see him shaping the muscle.
I feel like that requires a much higher budget than these movies had.
But I'm saying now. Create a movie now. We can send a rocket raccoon to space on a tree or however that movie goes. We can't show a man making muscles. I don't know. But again, like as you pointed out, it's there is a way to create life. It's a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more reliable.
Mm-hmm.
Like this entire the basic premise of this movie is, I feel like Mary Shelley's whole idea was, let's see what happens when a dude creates life. Let's see what happens. Oh look, he screws it up. Oh look, he panics and runs away. That's what happens when man.
Based on her husband.
When you're a proud papa. So in any case.
What happens when a woman isn't in the picture?
Yeah.
Let's find out.
Nope.
You create a monster.
So Paul gets all angry at Victor because Victor's like, no, I want to start bringing people back to life. I don't want to like bring dogs back to life. I want to do this with human beings. And Paul's like, that's creepy. Oh, by the way, Elizabeth's here. And she shows up all grown up.
Well, Paul wants to go to like the science thing and be like, this is a major breakthrough in medical technology. Like, let's.
Yeah.
Which he could have still done.
Right. Well, he's like, when are you going to write the paper? He's like, oh, I'm not. And Paul's like, what? We could be famous. And he's like, not for this. I'm like, yes, for this.
You just brought a dog back to life.
You brought a dog back to life. That's something. Or at least just like bring a human back to life, but don't build a new one.
Yeah, like.
Like the ability to bring a person back to life. And that dog was fine.
Yeah.
Like this isn't like Reanimator where he brings a cat back to life and it tries to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
This is just the dog is friendly and like bark, bark, bark.
And it's just a little dog friend.
He has a new puppy. We don't ever see the dog again.
Mm-hmm.
But then Elizabeth shows up. She's all, I'm here to move in.
And Paul's like, what?
And she's all, didn't you get my letter? I said I'm coming to visit and stay here for the rest of my life. And
well, Mary... she thinks Paul is Victor first.
It's so embarrassing. Another secondhand embarrassment from that.
I thought it was hilarious.
Because she's like, Victor. That's how she doesn't recognize Victor because it's been years.
Mm-hmm.
Like 50 years because he's an old man now.
Somehow she hasn't, like she's aged, but she hasn't aged.
Right. So this is Hazel Court playing Elizabeth, and she's very good. I like her a lot. Like, I like all the performances in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone does a bang-up job. They're very fun. They're a lot livelier than they are in the Universal films. Mm-hmm. And they're very British, except for Hazel Court, who I think is not British. In any case, I think she's, like, German or something. In any case, she could be British. I don't know. I don't know anything about Hazel Court.
Cool.
Forget her.
No, she's a central character. We can't do that.
That's true. So they keep digging up bodies, or they steal a body from the gibbets. No, when do they steal the body?
They steal it from the hanging.
Yeah, and they're like, ah, the face is all messed up,
and the hands are gross,
and he has terrible hands, and he's like, where are we gonna get hands? And Victor's like, don't worry about that.
And then Paul is like, bye.
Yep. And then he goes and he gets himself some hands. From a sculptor who mm-hmm. died, and he paid the guy to give him some hands. But what they need is the brain. Explain to our audience Victor's process for getting the best brain.
Inviting a scientist man over.
Uh-huh.
And pushing him off the balcony.
To land on his head.
Yep.
Which I was like, you want to know the best way to damage a brain? Kill someone by smashing their head. That's literally why they died.
And Frankenstein's like, you ruined the brain to right. Paul. And Paul's like...
So the old professor man dies. Well, Victor pushes him over a balcony and he dies. He's an old man, like a very old man. And the nicest man, Shades of Macbeth, invites an old man to his house.
Quote, nicest man.
He is the nicest man.
I don't know. He's kind of creepy.
Oh, he's just old.
No, he's kind of creepy towards Elizabeth, and I don't like it.
I didn't think he was creepy. I thought he was just affectionate. I honestly didn't think he was being creepy.
I did.
No, you're a better judge than I. So he deserved to die.
He didn't deserve to die. He was just weird.
Victor doesn't only push him over the balcony. No, he pushes him through the balcony because he breaks the balcony. As he pushes him, he's all, look out! Look out, sir!
Well, yeah, that's because he's trying to make it seem like he was trying to warn him.
And then the old man has no relatives.
Victor's like, he can be buried in my family's...
Crypt. And then Victor goes into the crypt to steal the brain, and Paul walks in on him, of course.
And he's just like...
We knew Paul was going to walk in on him, because in the background of every shot was the stairs. Mm-hmm. Leading. And we're like, someone's going to come down this. Someone's coming down. What's funny is he hears him coming, and he panics. And he tries to cover everything up. Then he sees Paul and he's like, oh, Paul, it's just you. And I was like, you're still stealing the brain of the guy who just died in your house. And Paul's like, you killed him, didn't you? And he's like, meh.
And well, first we thought Paul's brain was going to be the one that got picked.
They kept implying that. And I was like, this is a lot of setup for something that doesn't get paid off. And then I was like, I'm kind of okay with that. I kind of like the double blind. Like, they keep making you think that Paul's brain is, because he keeps being like, I just need a better brain, and he's staring at Paul, and I'm like, he's gonna kill him. But he never kills Paul.
I think because maybe he was planning on killing Paul, and Paul was just like, he just knew,
yeah,
like, and he was like, maybe I shouldn't kill Paul, or I'll end up getting killed by Paul.
So he puts the brain in a jar, and Paul like tries to get the brain away from him, and the jar ends up getting broken, mm-hmm. but in a bag. Mm-hmm. So the brain isn't completely destroyed, but it's got a bunch of pieces of glass in it.
The brain isn't completely destroyed. It's just been thrown off a balcony and has glass sticking out of it.
And as you and I were both yelling at the screen, just get a different brain. Like, at this point, it doesn't matter if it's the brain of a genius. You've half ruined it. Like, just get the brain of an average person is going to be fine at this point. It doesn't have glass shards stuck in it. I just don't understand why he's like, nope, gotta use this brain. Ugh, Victor. It's also what his plan was, what is called, I believe, the Batman Gambit. And the Batman Gambit is when you come up with a nefarious plot, in this case, to kill the old man, have everyone think it's an accident, have him not have any relatives, have them all agree that it's okay to be buried in your crypt, and make sure no one catches you, walks in on you. Every single part of your nefarious plan has to work exactly perfectly or the whole thing falls apart. It's called the Batman Gambit. And that is exactly what the guy worked at a school, I'm sure he was a professor. So if they were like, you know what, we're going to bury him with in the professor, it would have been out the window.
In the professor graveyard.
In the professor graveyard.
Where all of our professors are buried.
All of our brainless professors who fell off balconies are buried here at Miskatonic U. So he finally gets the monster put together. And
for all like he knows, like he could have had some obscure relative that he just was senile and forgot about.
Right. right. He's like, wait, no, that's my. Oh well.
That's my father. Right, what are you doing? Right.
My husband. So he puts the creature together, and Paul won't have anything to do with it. Obvs. So he's trying to bring the creature to life with his magic machine.
Mm-hmm.
But, much like the TARDIS...
It needs... What?
The TARDIS. Much like the TARDIS, it's designed for more than one person to work it.
Yeah, but the Doctor can actually work it on his own.
But wacky stuff always happens.
Well, because the TARDIS is a sentient being.
Well...
This is not what we're here to talk about.
Much like the TARDIS, the setup, the machine that's designed to create life, however it works, needs two people to operate
mm-hmm.
it. He's trying to run back and forth from... part to part, but it's just not bringing this monsterman back to life.
No.
So he leaves to
go to Paul's room, who's still living in the house.
Right, because he's like, I hate this, but okay.
I'm going to stay here to protect Elizabeth.
But while he's out of the room, lightning hits the machine.
Oh, right.
And starts it up, starts it going.
Really, really fast.
Yep. And that brings the monsterman to life.
Mm-hmm.
And he walks back into his lab with Paul.
After Paul has agreed if Victor afterwards destroys the creature.
And there's the thing standing in the middle of the room, swathed in bandages. And it's kind of a creepy little moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought so, when the creature, like, pulls the bandages off its face.
Well, first he goes to strangle Victor.
Well, describe for our audience what the monster looks like.
Dead. Yep, a dead man.
It looks like a man's face that's been stapled together from the skin and flesh of other men. Kind of looks like you would think it should look like, mm-hmm. I guess. Again, don't know why he didn't just use a fresh head. Why is it all stapled together?
Because he wanted the bone structure to be specific or something. I can't remember.
He is firmly convinced this thing's going to look great.
Yes.
In an era when if you got hit in the nose, you had a deformed nose the rest of your life because it's the 1800s. He's like, I'm going to put this man together from bits and pieces. Like in the original Frankenstein movie, Victor Frankenstein is not like, I'm creating a beautiful...
No, he is. He talks about how beautiful the man is, and then as soon as he opens his eyes, he's like, this man is not beautiful.
No, I'm talking about the movie.
Oh.
In the Universal film. He's just like, I'm building a blocky monster. I'm building basically a Minecraft man, because I don't care what he looks like. I'm just trying to prove that I can do this. Yeah, in the novel, no. He actually says, like, I'm making the most beautiful man with black lips and long flowing hair.
Mistakes.
Presumption. So the monster, yeah, immediately tries to kill him. It's violent. So they knock him out with a chair.
Any more brain damage to be had here?
Yeah, they smash a chair over its head. It gets knocked unconscious. He locks it in a room, but it escapes.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where the adventures begin. It goes out and it kills.
We haven't even talked about Justine yet.
Oh, we'll get to Justine. Don't worry.
To who?
Justine.
This podcast has ended.
We'll get to Justine. Don't worry. Justine. I can't say it now. We'll get to Justine. Just keep in mind there's a character named Justine who's been in the movie the entire time,
mm-hmm.
and is not the Justine from the novel.
No, but also is the Justine.
But she's kind of the Justine from the novel. So the monster goes out. He's in the woods. Who does he find?
A man and a boy.
But what is wrong with the man?
He's blind.
So this must be the same as the scene from the novel where he befriends the blind man.
No.
Well, this must be the same as the scene in the movie where he befriends the child by the river.
No.
What happens then?
He kills them both.
Why?
Because he sucks.
So we don't see him kill either of them, but we hear the blind man get attacked, and then the boy's like, Papa or Grandpa. It goes running. And then we don't see any of them after that.
No, until we find the little boy's satchel in the woods.
What does he do with them? What does the monster do with them?
We don't know.
We don't know why they're not there. Like, they're not there. Their bodies aren't anywhere. Does he eat them whole? Does he eat the whole boy?
He unhinges his jaw like a snake.
Is he like a Guillermo del Toro vampire and opens his jaw up and it's like... No, we don't know what he does with them. I am convinced that he hung them from the trees like the Predator.
Okay.
Because but there's no blood anywhere. The only reason they know that he is dead is because they find the boy's satchel. For all we know, he scared off the old man, and the boy was like, Grandpa, and then he grabbed his grandpa and they ran from the monster. For all we know.
Mm-hmm.
They're dead. I prefer that version.
You're wrong.
Because if it's that version, the only people he has killed is no one so
Yet.
Far. He's only tried to kill Victor, but who cares? Yeah, because they're like, oh, the monster. I love there's a moment where Paul taunts Victor. He's like, oh, is this your amazing mind? Because the monster's like, and he's all sit, and the monster can sit, and he's all stand, and the monster can stand. He's like, oh, great. Good job with the professor brain. This is your
good
like,
job creating a dog.
Right.
Oh, wait. We already did that.
So they hunt down the monster, and Paul has a gun. And what does he do?
They both have guns.
They shoot the monster in the face.
One of them shoots the monster in the face.
Paul shoots the monster in the eye, and you see a gush of blood, and the monster falls down.
Dead.
It's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And they bury it in the woods. They just bury it right there. They're like, done. We're done. We're done. We're done. We're done with the dead monster. We're done with the monster. Good thing it's dead and that no one here knows how to bring dead things back to life. Let's go back to the castle. Because then, of course, what happens?
Victor's like, I'm going to bring this dead monster back to life.
Which, okay, now we're like three times damaged brain. We're like, the brain is, first of all, the professor landed on his head and damaged his brain. First of all, no. First of all, the professor was senile. So already the brain is like atrophied and has like, and is probably like the early stages of Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. Like it's already a damaged brain. Mm-hmm. Professor falls off a balcony, lands on his head. And I'm not joking. The stuntman lands on his
head. It's hilarious because you can tell it's a stuntman. Okay.
It is very clearly not this incredibly old actor falling. But it's not a dummy either. Like, it's a dude.
Yeah, but it looks so funny.
So we've got atrophied brain that then lands on its head, that is then smashed in a sack. It is then operated on to remove the shards of glass literally sticking out of it. It is then smashed by a chair. And now it has been shot in the face. Like, it's been shot. Like, the brain has a bullet in it, probably. Or buckshot or something. But he brings it back to life. He's like, nope.
He's going to do brain surgery on it.
I'm going to keep working on this dude. I'm going to make him work. Now we can talk about Justine. Who is Justine?
His maid.
A little more story.
His lover.
His side piece. It's true. She thinks he's in love with her.
Well, because he said he was going to marry her.
Right. Why would he say that?
Because he's a piece of garbage.
Right. Because he wants it.
He wants a dead ass.
He wants to do the dirty with Justine, which he does mm-hmm. quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You get the feeling. Mm-hmm. You get to see some kissing in this movie. Like some real kissing. Like, I was like, whoa, that's some kissing for 1957 British monster movie. For Peter Cushing.
Let's keep talking. This is great.
But you get the idea that they have a very physical relationship. Yeah. And but we know that also that he's betrothed to Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. But we also know that he's not crazy about being betrothed to Elizabeth. He doesn't really care. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, is he going to like just stick by Justine? I can't imagine this working out until finally he's like, well, she's like, I'm preg. And he's all, beat it.
And she's like, no.
And she's all, I'm going to tell everybody what you're doing. And he's all, what am I doing? And she's all, things, something. And he's all, huh. You're gonna need to gather evidence on me if you're gonna convince anyone I'm a bad guy. Wink. She's all okay, and he kicks her out of the castle, but she doesn't leave.
He says that she has to be gone by the morning.
Yeah, something like that, which is weird. But how does she? What does she do instead?
Sneaks into his lab.
Oh, of course. What does she find there?
Some jars
and
a man.
What kind of a man?
A dead one.
A dead lumbering one. An oaf. Is this where he pulls the chain out of the wall?
No, he pulls the chain out of the wall when Elizabeth goes down.
In any case, she finds the monster. He keeps the monster in the closet. Mm-hmm. Like a little like chamber, a little room off to the side.
He keeps the monster in the closet.
There's a monster in my closet and its name is...
Nothing.
Nothing. It doesn't have a name. Never gives a name. Yeah, he locks Justine in the room with the monster and you assume he unhinges his jaw and eats her whole because that's what he does. Yeah, Victor never is like getting rid of bodies in mm-hmm. this. He's just, this people die and then that's it. But that's how he gets rid of Justine. We don't know if she's actually pregnant or if she's just trying to get him to stay with her. Again, the monster isn't a character in this movie. It's sort of a force of nature. It's mm-hmm. just this like weird weapon that mm-hmm. he's using to like get rid of people. So then, wedding bells. Elizabeth's all, I hope you don't mind, but I invited Paul to the wedding. We don't actually see the wedding.
Because it doesn't happen.
Right. We see the day before the wedding, mm-hmm. the party, the wedding party. Mm-hmm. So the monster is there. And Victor is like, hey, Paul, come, you want to see my monster again? And I'm like, why do you keep dragging? Paul does not like the monster. Paul does not want you to build the monster. Paul does not want any of this to happen.
No, he says, because Paul thinks the monster's dead. He goes, Paul, I have something to show you. And Paul's like, okay.
But I don't know why he keeps doing that. Like, I guess he needs to brag. I guess he needs... But he knows that Paul isn't going to be like, good job. I was against this the first 5 times you did it. But now that he's killed so many people, I'm happy that you finally brought the monster back to life again. Oh, what? Now he's just drooling in a corner? Great. That's a good job, Mr. Scientist. No, Paul does not say that. Paul's instead like... He does that thing that people in movies do that I hate. Where instead of just going... huh, and walking out of the room, putting on your coat and going to the cops, he stops and he goes, I'm going to the police and I'm going to tell them everything that you've done and you're going to go to jail forever. I'm going to go right now out this door to the, and then of course he gets shut in the room. Like, I don't understand. Like, why don't people, like, all he has to do is go, interesting, turn on his heel, walk out the door. That's how you go to the police. Everyone writing movies or being in them, acting as, if you're a character in a movie, don't tell the villain you're going to the police. Just turn on your heel and walk to the cops. There's my advice right there. Because Victor Frankenstein shuts the door and they start fighting.
Mm-hmm.
But
Paul gets out. Victor chases him.
Yeah.
Elizabeth's like, what the hell is going on?
Right.
She goes down to the lab because she's never been allowed there.
Yes.
Because there's some part of Victor cares about her.
Or he just doesn't want to find out. I don't know. Like, the guy's pretty psychopathic.
I don't know. Like, there's that one, like, anyway, she goes and she finds the monster. She's like, ah! Actually, she doesn't find the monster. The monster's gotten out. He's gotten out through a window.
So, of course.
She's like, I'm going to follow this.
Whatever it is.
So with nothing but a candle.
Yeah, she goes out onto the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul and Victor are fighting down below, and they look up and they see...
the monster.
Do they see the monster or her?
They see the creature.
Okay.
We should call it the creature because that's what it's called in the movie.
They see the creature. That's true. They do call it the creature. They go riding back all the way up to the castle. Oh, something we left out that comes into play in like 5 seconds. At the beginning of the movie, they've cut the guy down off the gibbet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, this guy's head isn't going to work. Victor cuts it off and he puts it in an acid bath. Mm-hmm. He just has a huge human-sized vat of acid just chilling out in his study that can dissolve bone and flesh in an hour. In mm-hmm. 1 hour, it just gets rid of it completely. He puts the head in it in the beginning to prove it. You don't see it dissolve. Apparently, that scene was filmed, but has never been found. It was immediately cut. The censors were like, you got to get rid of the... There's a couple of photos of the actual head, though.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gruesome, and you're kind of glad that it was gruesome. But that's all set up. They're like, he's like... I have my big open vat of acid right here under this skylight.
Imagine if like some like thief or something had been trying to like break into his house and it just fallen into.
You'd never know. You'd just be like, huh, my window's broken.
Wonder what happened.
Wonder what happened. I don't know. There's no evidence.
But this is the part where I'm like, does he care about Elizabeth? Because he calls very emotionally, Elizabeth.
That's true.
And then runs.
That's true. The monster grabs her from behind.
Mm-hmm.
So keep in mind, she never sees the monster.
Mm-hmm.
It grabs her from behind. Victor pulls out his gun.
And shoots.
Elizabeth. I was like, oh, snap.
Well, I mean, as soon as he had the gun, I was like, he's going to shoot Elizabeth.
There's a very famous movie, a very famous American movie, classic of American cinema, called Speed, starring Keanu Reeves. There's a scene where, I don't remember how it comes to play, but he's all pop quiz, hot shot. If someone has been taken hostage by someone who's like holding a gun to them and they're using them as a shield, like, what do? And the answer is you shoot the hostage. You shoot the hostage in a place where it won't hurt them or in a place where it won't kill them. It's a risk. But then the person who's holding the hostage will then drop them and then you can shoot the person mm-hmm. holding the hostage. That is literally what Dr. Frankenstein does.
But not on purpose.
No. I mean, maybe he's just trying to get Elizabeth out of the way. I don't know. He shoots Elizabeth in the shoulder and she mm-hmm. falls. And then he shoots the monster.
But it doesn't do anything.
So then what does he do?
He gets back into a corner.
And he
throws a lantern at it.
And then what does he do?
Cries. I can't remember.
What's the monster do?
Gets set on fire.
And then...
the end. Oh, wait.
Wait, no.
No.
he doesn't like, dissolve. He does, but...
He falls into the skylight and drops into the vat of acid.
Where he's dissolved instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're like, oh, and then we're back in the jail. And he's all, that's my story. And...
the priest is like, cool story, bro. Bye.
And he's like, wait, wait, wait. And then Paul shows up and he's all, Paul, Paul, Paul. Paul, Paul, Paul. Tell them everything I said is true. Tell them about my monster. And Paul's all,
what?
What are you talking about? And I was like, that's cold, Paul.
But anyways, he's in the jail cell, and when Paul refuses to do it, Victor goes to like strangle him.
Uh-huh.
And then I said something. Do you remember what I said?
No.
I said, that's really cool because the way that Victor goes to strangle Paul is the same exact way the monster goes to strangle everyone else.
Yep.
So there is the option that everything was in his head and he really was just insane.
So then who did they break a chair over their head?
Maybe Paul was breaking a chair over Victor's head. And it was all delusions.
So who was Victor seeing when Paul would show him the monster?
Maybe there was like a dead body.
Oh. It's an idea. Well,
who was Victor seeing when Paul showed him the monster? What are you on about?
I was confused.
there might have been a dead body.
And so
Paul was just like, what is that?
So Victor's like, no, 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 it's a monster, it's a monster. And Paul's like,
bye.
Leaves.
Gonna go with your wife now. So
right. Yeah. He apparently hooks up with Elizabeth, who's wearing a sling. I was happy. Like, she obviously got shot. And the last shot is Victor being walked to the guillotine.
Mm-hmm. And you see, and then the guillotine blades draws up, and then it pauses, and there's the credits.
Yep. He's gonna get his head chopped off. Or is he? Because there's a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And that is The Curse of Frankenstein. The Curse of Frankenstein. This movie was a huge success, and it kickstarted the career of Christopher Lee and, to an extent, Peter Cushing. Peter Cushing had done a lot of television and stuff, but he had never been like a leading man. This was Peter Cushing's big breakout as like a leading man.
Big breakout.
It was his big breakout. He played Victor Frankenstein multiple times. I think six more times after this, five or six more times. And he ended up playing Van Helsing in all their Dracula movies.
Mm-hmm.
So just he was their leading man. He also, this is where he met Christopher Lee, who played the monster. This was Christopher Lee's, he had been in a lot of movies, but he wasn't getting anywhere. And his agent was like, you don't want to play the monster in Frankenstein. Like, it doesn't have any lines. And you're going to be behind makeup. And he's like, look, dude, it's the one of the main roles and I can get paid. And he was basically just like, no one else is casting me. And this is not a step down. Like, I read an interview with him. He's like, this isn't like, I am getting nothing. So, they wanted this guy named Bernard Breslau to play. He's like this big stunt actor, I guess. But his agent was demanding like 12 pounds a day or something to play him. And Christopher Lee's was asking like 11 or 10. And they're like, well, cast Christopher Lee. He'll be slightly cheaper. So they cast Christopher Lee. He and Peter Cushing became BFFs for reals, best friends forever. Like, they were best friends since Peter Cushing's death. Christopher Lee so impressed them. Like, even though he was just playing this, he never played the monster again. But when they did, after this movie, they were like, well, now we did this, let's do Dracula. Who are we going to cast as Dracula? And they're like, Christopher Lee. Dude, 7 feet tall, he's awesome. And that was like basically made Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee the stars of Hammer Films for like two decades. Like, they were the marquee names. They became two of the biggest names in horror, two of the biggest names in genre films. They went on to do a dozen films together. And of course, we know Christopher Lee died not too many years ago, just mm-hmm. recently, in the ripe old age of 90 something after making.
You know who else just died?
George H.W. Bush.
Yep.
Yep. He was never in a Frankenstein movie. He was very tall, though,
mm-hmm.
and thin, like Christopher Lee.
Also like Doug Jones.
Yes. Christopher Lee, who's not dead. Christopher Lee recorded a number of heavy metal albums, by the way, in his 90s.
That is amazing.
He loved metal music. So that's just something awesome to know. His makeup was done. It wouldn't work. They couldn't get it to work. So they figured it out at the last minute. Like literally that day, they were like, here, this will work. And they slapped a bunch of stuff on his face, which is why the makeup wasn't consistent throughout. It always kind of looked different, which is fine because the monster kept getting like shot in the face anyway. but it was so disgusting that no one would sit with him at the commissary during lunch. Everyone was so grossed out by the monster makeup. Like I said, everyone hated this movie, but everyone loved this movie. Here's a quote from Dillis Powell. Dillis is a great name. But she wrote that such productions left her unable to, quote, defend the cinema against the charge that it debases, while the Tribune opined the film was depressing and degrading for anyone who loves the cinema. The UK in the Monthly Film Bulletin said the Frankenstein story was, quote, sacrificed by an ill-made script, poor direction and performance, and above all, a preoccupation with disgusting, not horrific, charnelry. Although it did have excellent art direction and color, and they liked the score. However, In the States, it was deemed a rattling good horror show. The Frankenstein monster has been ghoulishly and somewhat gleefully resurrected by our English cousins. Well produced, but extremely gruesome. The photography is fine, and so is the acting. So, in America, it went over well. Variety said that Peter Cushing gets every inch of drama from the leading role, making almost believable the ambitious urge and diabolical accomplishment. And everyone loves this movie. Like, people are like, oh, look, a good Frankenstein movie. Like, it's not as stylish, maybe, as the Universal ones, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, I think it's a lot of fun.
It is fun.
It is a fun movie.
I wouldn't watch it again.
You don't want to watch any of these movies again.
No, I don't.
I enjoyed watching it immensely. It's not campy. It's a little over the top. You commented on Elizabeth's clothes at one point. She wears like the low cut flower dress. Here's an interesting thing that I learned. A lot of her costumes were actually from that era. They were part of a collection of dresses that have been passed down for generations from like the mid-1800s. They were like legit period dresses that she was wearing. I thought that was pretty cool.
She looked like Belle.
She did look like Belle. She was wearing a yellow dress in one scene.
And had her hair in the same style.
Yeah, it was pretty. And I'm like, did they?
No, they couldn't have. Because they couldn't have dressed her up like Belle.
No. Did the Belle people.
Oh. I was like, what are you on
time
about?
Time travelers. this movie is followed by The Revenge of Frankenstein, then The Evil of Frankenstein, then Frankenstein Created Woman, then Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed, then a remake called The Horror of Frankenstein, and then Frankenstein and the Monster from Hell. And that was the last Hammer Frankenstein movie. There was a magazine, House of Hammer, something like that.
Hammer House.
Yes, House of Hammer. That is actually, if you want to read them, they are available at archive.com. Someone's put every issue of House of Hammer online. In issues 2 and 3, each issue has like an adaptation of a Hammer movie in comic book form. Issues 2 and 3 adapt this movie very well. It's very fun. And in that version of it, he does not kill the blind man and the little boy. He just scares them and runs away, leaving the monster at that point, before he gets shot, completely innocent of killing anyone. So when he gets shot in the face, Victor Frankenstein screams, no, he's not a killer. Let him live. But he gets shot in the face anyway.
I feel like that's a good thing. Because yeah. I think that if he had been given the option, he would have killed them.
I don't think the monster was happy.
I don't think the monster had any idea what it was doing because its brain was so mushy.
It was
mushy.
Very damaged. So, okay. Guillermo del Toro.
What did you just say?
Guillermo del Toro loves Frankenstein.
We know.
We know it. We respect it. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. He put several Frankenstein movies on this list. This is the third one that we've watched.
Yes.
Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, and now Curse of Frankenstein. What is it specifically do you think about this movie that makes it stand out from a Guillermo del Toro perspective?
It's very different than the other one.
Uh-huh.
The monster is Frankenstein.
Because it's not a sympathetic monster in this one.
No.
This is not your Guillermo del Toro misunderstood creature.
Mm-hmm.
It's gruesome. It's more gruesome than the other two. We see cow's eyes. The only difference between this and the European cut, the American cut and the European cut, in the American cut, you see one of those eyes close up. But they decided that was too much for American audiences.
I've already seen a cow eye in real life, so that wouldn't have been that bad.
It's a person eye. It's a real person eye. It's so obviously a cow eye, and you're like, they're like, I got these from... It's like, man, that guy must have had huge eyes. I don't know, like... I can see why Guillermo del Toro, he doesn't really have anything online about why this is, like, a lot of these movies he's talked about. He just says, like, Curse of Frankenstein, top notch, Hammer quality, great Hammer.
Great Hammer.
It's very gothic. Mm-hmm. Like, unlike Universal's James Whale's Frankensteins, which were very German expressionist, this is very much like the old castle. And do you know why they were able to get such a good castle look out of this?
Because they're in Europe.
I love this. Hammer movie. So Hammer Films have been in existence for a couple of decades, of course, before this, and they made like just cheapy, quickie little films. They were just a studio, a successful studio, but they kept getting shut down and started back up because for reasons. Just times are tough, now times aren't tough. Someone else comes on board, revives them. But what's crazy about Hammer, and I don't know if this is a Europe thing or a Hammer thing or a British thing, but we don't have this in America. But their studios, Hammer Studios, always are set, like are housed and filmed. The stages are in mansions. Like, where's Hammer Studios? Oh, it's in that castle over there. Like, they would buy these old busted mansions and tear out some walls and make stages and or just film them in the house. That's why they're like, Hammer movies look great, because they're actually being filmed in these old mansions that look great. And they'll be like, well, the mansion is on a bunch of land, so any outdoor scenes are just going to be filmed on the lawn or in the woods over there. And that's kind of the Hammer look. But I was like, you know, like in America, like Universal, in America, when the studios started, it was like, well, we've got all this California over here, so just build whatever the heck you want. We need a ghost town, we'll just build a ghost town. Like, that's what America did. But I guess in Europe, they didn't have all this extra. Like, it's a little, well, England is a little island.
And also, it was much more settled than America.
Right,
was.
Right. There were people everywhere. They built all these castles. I just thought that was pretty cool. So, but yeah, it has that gothic feel. And like, the monster is a real creature. And Victor is a bad guy. But it's about him. He's like your protagonist, but he's still like the villain. I don't know. I can see where Del Toro would be like, that's an interesting take on Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not our last Frankenstein movie. If you're looking for it, if you want to get a copy of this, check out the Blu-ray. There's a Blu-ray that's, and actually you can see it in two versions, in its original aspect ratio and then in an open mat aspect ratio. It's basically the same. There's not a whole lot of extra image in the open mat, but it's just interesting that like it's viewable either way. It's a really nice restoration. We had to watch the Amazon Prime version of it. Cause
why do you think that was?
I had gotten a copy of it from an old Hammer collection, and because I can't watch DVDs on my computer, I had to rip it to an ISO file. We go to watch it, and it's in
Spanish.
Spanish. I don't know why I accidentally like ripped it as a Spanish file. I don't know why I did that. So we rented it from Amazon Prime. It's fine on Amazon Prime. The picture's great. But there's a lot of like cool special features on the Blu-ray if you pick that up. I would also recommend, while you're at it, go online on YouTube. It's posted, or it's a special feature on the Blu-ray, but it's actually, I think it's in public domain, so it's legal to watch it this way. Look up Tales of Frankenstein. It's a 30-minute pilot that Hammer Films did for a Frankenstein TV series for American television, but it's a short little Frankenstein story. It is well-acted, wonderfully filmed. It's got great cinematography. It uses some stock footage, but it's like watching a little mini Hammer horror film, and it's a great Frankenstein story. What they do with them, Universal had gotten involved at this point and was like, go ahead and use our Frankenstein design, like try to make it look more like the Universal, because they were allowed to do it at this point. So the monster kind of looks like a kitbashed Universal Frankenstein. But it's worth watching, and it's free, and it's like 27 minutes long, so go watch it. So Curse of Frankenstein, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Thumbs up.
Check it out. And check out our next movie, which is
The Seventh Seal.
The Seventh Seal.
I remembered the name.
The Seventh Seal. Det Sjunde Isleglet. I don't speak the language.
The language of what was that?
It was Swedish. Swedish. Swedish film directed by Ingmar Bergman. You may have heard of him. Little filmmaker from Sweden. Excuse me. I guess we'll watch this movie next week and we'll be able to answer the question, does God exist? Let's find out.
We're not going to answer that question because we don't want to get shut down by the church.
This is a big one. Fun fact, I've never seen The Seventh Seal.
Fun fact, neither have I.
I'm looking forward to this a lot.
I wonder if there's going to be any seals in it.
It is all about seals, and the seventh one sings a song. It's a fun movie.
It's just an older version of Happy Feet, but with seals.
It's a better version of Happy Feet. Ingmar Bergman's The Seventh Seal. So join us next week or next episode for that. And that's it.
Yep.
We got more Frankenstein at some point. All right. Well, I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And we'll see you when
it's Del Toro time.